McGill Daily of the Daily.
I'm McGill Daily.
Hi, I'm calling from the McGill Daily. Can I ask you some questions?
Is anyone using this computer?
This is a little bit problematic.
News.
Are you designed? Could I see you for a second?
We're going to cap this.
News, can you dummy?
Did that story come in yet?
Editorials in 5 minutes.
McGill Daily.
Unfit to print.
You're listening to Unfit to Print, a McGill Daily and CKUT News collaboration. I'm your host, Anya Sivajothi. Unfit to Print is a student-produced bi-weekly show that brings the latest of McGill and Montreal news. On today's episode, we'll be hearing excerpts from the SMU General Assembly, where the motion to support boycott, divestment, and sanctions passed with 58% of the votes, followed by an interview with the members of the movement. After that, we'll hear from the members of the Sexual Assault Policy Working Group, who recently released the final proposed draft of the sexual assault policy last week. But first, headlines. On February 22nd, almost 900 students gathered in the Shatner Building to participate in the Student Society of McGill University, also known as SMU, Winter 2016 General Assembly. A motion in support of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement passed with 58% of the vote, a motion for an increase in Indigenous content at McGill, and a motion regarding the procurement of products containing conflict minerals by SMU also passed. A motion regarding support for the women title holders of the land who delivered a notice of seizure and a list of demands to the McGill University in September was added to the agenda at the GA. This motion was postponed until the Winter 2016 General Assembly. From February 15th to 19th, Concordia held its Anti-Consumerism Week, an event series aimed at consuming less and questioning the economic systems that are currently failing us and inspiring our community to adopt a more self-sufficient lifestyle, according to the event's Facebook page. Events included do-it-yourself workshops to teach participants to make everything from kombucha to personal hygiene products, a clothing swap, and a farmer's market. Montreal-based Foundation for the Compulsory Study of Genocide in Schools is currently fighting for the provincial government to incorporate mandatory genocide studies in Quebec high schools. Genocide is defined as the purposeful killing of a large group of people, particularly from a specific nation or ethnic group. Heidi Berger, creator of the foundation and an instructor at the Concordia Center for Continuing Education, argues that too many secondary school students leave school with little or no information about genocide, such as the Holocaust or Canada's residential school system, as Quebec's high school do not integrate these histories enough into their curriculum. For more in-depth coverage of the news stories, please visit mcgilldaily.com/news. We'll now be hearing an excerpt recorded at the SMU Winter General Assembly where the results of the vote is just being announced with regards to the motion to support BDS. Following that, we'll hear an interview with one of the participants at the GA.
So just before we announce the results, everybody, this week we'll be discussing some logistical things, but just a quick reminder that, understandably, because this is the reason for which a lot of people came tonight, please remember that regardless of what the results dictate, to be respectful of one another, we are still a community that care about one another, regardless of what has prompted this discussion to be here today. So please embody that in your departure and in how you treat each other. Thank you.
With all the votes counted, the motion carries 512 to 357 with 14 abstentions. The motion carries.
It's an amazing feeling to finally to see justice win. Like, I don't know. It's when you're on the right side of history, it's kind of like it's empowering when something like this happens. To like it validates what you're feeling. I don't know how to say it. I've never been quoted, so I like don't know.
Well, that's fine. And there's, well, like there's still going to be the online ratification
right.
happening, but I think this is a. What do you think?
Like, okay, well, I've talked to so many people who have said that issues like this only divide the campus, and that the GA isn't very representative of like everyone's voices. So now we get the chance. So now we finally get the chance through the online ratification to see if, like, how well it correlates to, like, the rest of the university.
The live recording from the General Assembly held on February 22nd. We'll now be hearing from the members of the McGill BDS network that pushed this motion forward.
My name is Aisha, and I am part of the BDS Action Network.
My name is Melis, and I've been a part of SPHR since last year. And, yeah, also part of the BDS Action Network right now.
The motion to support BDS passed yesterday at the SMU Winter General Assembly with 512 votes for and 357 votes against. So how do you feel about that?
I feel euphoric. We've worked for this for like 2 years now, and to finally see it come into fruition is amazing. And to have the whole student body voice their opinions on something so important, I think it's an amazing feeling to finally be on the right side of history.
Yeah, also just the fact that like only 18 months ago we tried to pass a simple solidarity motion with Palestine and it was indefinitely postponed, and to see that today we had full BDS passed at the SMU General Assembly is really amazing.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that passing this motion is so important, especially given the context that the Canadian Parliament voted also yesterday to condemn those promoting BDS, and it was a conservative motion that passed with 229 for and 51 against?
Yeah, I think the fact that it happened on the same day is pretty, like, amazing.
Yeah.
And I think, like, we gave a really clear message that students are against what's happening in Israel and Israeli apartheid. And we, like, just to think about what happened with South African apartheid, that a lot of countries for a long time were for the apartheid regime. And it was student activists who pushed a lot for the changes that happened there. I think it's really important that these two happened at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. Like, a common criticism I've heard of the motion and of BDS in general is that a lot of governments are, like, against it. But as Melis said, like, governments are against a lot of things that aren't, I don't know, they don't really stand for justice in a lot of ways. So I think having the two motions pass on the same day is, like, it's kind of, like, just symbolic of this, like, student struggles and activist grassroots struggles and like institutional oppression.
All right. So yesterday when defending the motion or criticizing the motion, some people have said that this motion might be divisive for the student population at McGill and might lead to a rise in anti-Semitism. So what do you have to say to respond to that?
Well, something I would say is that the campus has already been divided because of McGill does hold investment in a fair few companies that profit off of the occupation. So, like, the student body was already divided by those who were obviously feeling the impact of that, of those abuses. And, like, I think by not saying anything, that's not really remaining neutral, and that's actually just siding with the oppressor. So, I don't think that this is a divisive motion, and...
And just to add to that, like, as organizers of BDS, we are very conscious of our own organizing and have had a lot of anti-oppression training and also just address anti-Semitism within our own organizing. So, like, we are, like, very much conscious of, like, what we do and, like, consciously make an effort to address that, and will, like, in the case of the motion passing online ratification, will also be very open to continuing that on a campus-wide, campus-wide scale. And, yeah, like, are just, like, against any form of racism, which anti-Semitism is also a part of it.
Yeah, and then one last thing I would add is that we're not, like, our problem here is we don't want to conflate the religion of Judaism with Zionism, and, like, they're not the same thing. And like, there's a few really good articles that have been written about the same kind of thing.
And also just one final thing, yesterday a member of the Concordia BDS organizing group was talking about, like, how since they passed the BDS motion almost a year ago now, and in this year they've had a lot better like conversations happening on campus, and like there hasn't been any rise in anti-Semitism, and yeah, like there has been a lot more dialogue between like Zionist students and like students who are pro-Palestinian.
Okay, so you also mentioned that there's an online ratification happening for the motion. So what are the next steps for McGill BDS Network?
So the next step would be after the online ratification is passed, we would continue with our CAMSR campaign and our general educational activities, as well as, yeah, just like working more with SMU to follow through with their BDS mandate. And yeah.
All right, thank you so much for having this interview with me.
Thank you.
USA and attack. You better watch your back. Crick, crack. La France and attack. You better watch your back. Crick, crack. L'Angleterre and attack. You better guard your back. Crick, crack. Pire en pire and attack. You better watch your back. Alors j'attaque en solidarité avec Afghanistan, Irak, Haïti, Palestine, Cuba et tous les réfugiés à Guantanamo Bay et tous les prisonniers. C'est cri cri crac, USA à l'attaque. Cric, cric, crac, la France à l'attaque. Cric, cric, crac, l'Angleterre à l'attaque. Le pire empire à l'attaque. You better watch your back.
You just finished hearing from the members of the McGill BDS Network speaking on the motion in support of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions that passed at the SMU General Assembly. We'll now be hearing from two members from the Sexual Assault Policy Working Group, Talia Gruber and Kai O'Doherty, who worked on the proposed sexual assault policy that was released on February 17th.
Hi, my name is Kai O'Doherty, and I'm a McGill graduate.
My name is Talia Gruber. I'm a current McGill student, and I'm also involved with SACOMS, and that's how I started with SAP. Mm-hmm.
So for our listeners, could you explain a bit more about the sexual assault policy?
Sure. So a group of students for the last 2 and a bit years have been working to create a sexual assault policy at McGill, because right now there is no policy that exists. There are multiple procedures that exist, such as the policy on harassment, sexual harassment, and discrimination, and then more informal routes of recourse, as well as the student code of conduct, which are all applied to sexual assault right now, but there is no specific policy or university stance on sexual assault and how to support survivors. And so we had asked for the university to create a policy at least 2 years ago, and then the response was to have us create our own if we wanted to see it, and we took up that challenge, and so we've spent the last 2 years writing what we see as a spirited document, which will mandate the university to have a proactive, pro-survivor and anti-oppressive stance towards sexual assault, which will then translate into improving the procedures that exist for survivors of sexual assault on campus.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned McGill. Like, what are some of the policies, or like, what are some of the problems that McGill has currently regarding sexual assault?
Right, and so this lack of policy at all, I think, is one of the biggest problems. You know, sexual assault is a huge issue in all of society, but especially prevalent on university campuses. And we see that the lack of specific procedures tailored around experiences of sexual assault are a huge issue. And so some things that are more specific to sexual assault include the real importance of confidentiality and maintaining confidentiality of the survivor, as well as trying to empower the survivor to make their own decisions and to follow what they want out of the situation, rather than, say, more procedures that require, you know, people to judge, to like present evidence, and to have to prove that you've experienced something in order to get any kind of support. Even we mean support in ways that don't actually affect other parties involved in the situation, such as perpetrators. And so, confidentiality and actually following what the demands are and the needs are of the survivor are things that definitely lack right now.
Okay, and so for the policy, when did the working group start working on it, I guess, and I guess who was involved with it?
Mm-hmm. So after in 2013, with a case which kind of exposed that McGill lacked sufficient response to sexual assault cases, in a case that happened with three of the McGill football players and a Concordia student, brought to light the inadequacies of how McGill handles sexual assault, and in response to that, multiple groups submitted a call for action, essentially. And so those groups included the SMU, the Union for Gender Empowerment, the Sexual Assault Center of McGill Student Society, some feminist law collectives, Kuperk McGill, and Queer McGill. And so these groups initially were just trying to ask for a response, and then eventually members of those groups, as well as other individuals, joined the working group in 2014, so about 2 years ago, to start working on this policy.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that the policy addresses is intersectionality. And why is that important when acknowledging sexual assault and working with sexual assault?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, it's obviously important to take into account that sexual assault affects different people differently. And there are higher rates of sexual assault for people of color, for example, for trans people, for Indigenous women, people with disabilities. And that was something that initially the working group hadn't taken into consideration enough. And thankfully, in the past, you know, year or so, half a year, based on responses we had received to the policy, we started to branch out and take feedback and consultations from various groups across campus that we hoped could help us achieve that. And since then, having incorporated all that feedback, we're hoping and we feel that the policy that we've put forward has better addressed issues of intersectionality and sexual assault than we had previously. So that's something we're really excited about in this version.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the next steps with the policy?
Sure, yeah. So we just submitted our final draft and have sent that over to Andre Kostopoulos, who's the Dean of Students, and Angela Campbell, who does procedure, policy, and equity at McGill. And our goal right now is to have them look over that policy and give us feedback for ways that they think we could change the policy to have it easier to pass it through Senate. So we're hoping that in the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, we'll sort of negotiate back and forth with the administration and try to come up with a collaborative policy that both keeps our vision of the initial policy that we had drafted, but is also in line with how the university likes to create policies and pass them. And hopefully within the next 4 weeks, we'll have that finalized version and we'll pass it through Senate later this semester.
Mm-hmm. And is there any action currently being done to create more awareness about the policy as well as sexual assault on campus?
Yeah, so two separate things probably. We're all working really hard to have this final draft of the policy disseminated as widely as possible. And first of all, that's because we have so many stakeholders in this process now and so many folks whose labor we value so much, and we wanted them to be able to see the like fruits of that labor in a policy. So that's why we've disseminated it. We've got, interviews. We've done interviews with The Daily and The Trib and here, obviously, in CTV, which was really exciting. Yeah, so that's our goal with the policy. In terms of ways to reduce sexual assault on campus, obviously, SACOMS, the Sexual Assault Center, is always like up and running and doing that really important work on campus. Bianca Tetro, who was hired, I guess, almost a year and a half ago, something like that, 2 years ago, does some great work on campus, providing like educational tools and campaigns and resources and working on the procedures that are already in place at McGill to try to make them better. She's been really great with that. So that's been really helpful. We're going to continue to do all that work like as we create this final version of the policy.
All right. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Yeah, if you're interested in helping support this policy and other efforts on McGill campus to address sexual assault, you can contact, as Talia said, the Sexual Assault Center to get more information and volunteer with them. But if you're more specifically interested in the policy, you can email us at you can check out our website at sexualassaultpolicy@mcgill.com or email us at sapp.mcgill@gmail.com. We'd really love to have any support and help in trying to encourage the university and Senate to pass this policy.
All right. Thank you so much for doing this interview.
Thank you.
You just finished hearing from the members of the Sexual Assault Policy Working Group who recently just released a proposed draft of the sexual assault policy for McGill. And that brings us to the end of this edition of Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. Make sure to tune in 2 weeks to check out our next episode, and in the meantime, check out our previous coverage and podcasts on mcgilldaily.com/podcast or pick up a print copy.